Hey folks, Squirrel here. I mentioned this morning on Squirrel Chatter Live that I had an opportunity yesterday to interview award-winning author Michael R. Ritt about his book, The Sons of Philo Gaines. And I wanted to post that interview for you now. I apologize for the sound quality. I guess I didn't realize just how echoey it was there in the basement where we did the interview. So hopefully you can last through the echoes and enjoy the interview. Mike's a great guy, and it was a good interview and a great book. I highly recommend it. And you can check the show notes. I have the link for where to get the book and the link to Mike's author page also. So get more information about, he's got other published works out there, and he's working on the second book in this series. And well, I'll let you listen to him talk about it. Here's the interview.
Decidedly Christian, distinctly biblical, and just a little bit nuts. This is Squirrel Chatter.
And welcome to the Pining Woods, ladies and gentlemen. I am your squirrel, the host, coming to you not from the ARN studios, not from the tallest tree in the Piney Woods. We're actually in the basement of Frenchtown Community Church, and I'm here talking to award-winning author Michael Ritt about his new book, The Sons of Philo Gaines. Now, the book's been out, what, about a year now?
It's been out about a year and a week or so.
A year and a week. And I finally got to finish reading it this week. I pre-ordered a copy. I've had it since it was published. And I finally got around to reading it. This is the joys of taking seminary classes where I have huge reading assignments.
Sure, I understand.
What got you into writing?
Well, I've been writing probably since I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't a jock in high school. I was more academic, and so I spent a lot of time in books. And I think anybody who reads a lot, especially if they're reading fiction, secretly wants to be a writer.
Mm.
And so I started writing in high school, but I wrote mostly poems when I was in high school. I didn't really start writing stories until a few years later.
Okay. And how long was this book perking?
This book perked for quite a while. It actually started with just the name of the book, The Sons of Philo Gaines. And
usually the title's on the last thing
you
come
up with. Yeah, I know. I don't know how other writers do it, but this is how it evolved for me. It started with the title. And I was at work. I worked for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Food Safety Inspection Service. So I was working as a food inspector at the time, which meant that I was working on a beef slaughter line. And the work is rather mundane, and my mind gets to wander a lot. So I was thinking about a story that I could write. And I started thinking about my sons. I have three sons.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, well, what would they have been like if they had been born in the latter part of the 1800s? And so the three sons of Philo Gaines are actually based on my three sons.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Which one's the gambler?
The gambler's my son, David. he's into video games.
Okay, all right.
He likes gaming, so he's a gambler, and David is a very easygoing person. He's easy to talk to, and he's very generous. I mean, he'd give you the shirt off his back.
Right.
And then my oldest son, Robert, is the inspiration for Matt Gaines, who's the scholar,
school teacher.
The school teacher, yes. Robert is very, very academic, very he's a very intelligent guy. He's a little socially awkward, which I was when I was in school.
I resemble that.
Yeah. So that's he became the inspiration for Matt. Then my youngest son, Luke, is obviously Luke Gaines. And Luke is very independent. He doesn't really care to be told what to do.
Mm-hmm.
He likes to do his own thing. He has a very highly developed sense of justice, which in the book, Luke Gaines,
the character definitely has that, yeah.
So that's where that came from.
One of the things that I noticed reading the book was that you don't have any throwaway characters. Every one of the characters in the book, not just the primary characters, not just the secondary characters, right. but shopkeepers, right. stagecoach drivers, they're all fully developed characters. Yes. They're not just cardboard cutouts.
Right.
Were you conscious of that, or was it just something that you just...
I wasn't really conscious of it. I think that's kind of a side effect of being able to actually write a novel. This is my first novel.
Right, you had some short stories published.
Right, I've got about a dozen short stories that are published in different anthologies and in magazines. And when you write a short story, you have to get a complete story down in, you know, 7,000 to 10,000, 15,000 words. Mm-hmm. And you don't really have time to develop the characters the way that you do in a novel. So I think when I jumped into doing a novel, that was just kind of a side effect. I got to spend more time with the characters and develop them as individuals.
But even other novelists, as I read their work, they have background characters that mm-hmm. aren't developed.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I was kind of thinking ahead also, because some of the characters in this novel are going to show up in other novels too. So I was kind of preparing that background for them.
And what was the stagecoach shotgun rider with the mule?
Lloyd Barda.
Are you going to write a book on him? Because he seemed like a real interesting character.
He is going to show up probably in book three.
Book three.
Yes. I'm working on okay. book two right now, which is going to feature primarily one of the sons. And then the father, Philo Gaines, is going to be a major part of that book, as well as another family member that I'm introducing.
Right, because Philo was kind of a background character.
Right.
And he never really took part in this story.
Right. His story was just kind of assumed for this
right.
book.
So you're going to go back and develop his story a little bit?
Yeah, well, he's primarily going to be in book three. What the second book I'm working now is a sequel to book one. Book three is going to be a prequel to both.
Gotcha.
And I'm going to be telling the story of Philo Gaines.
Okay.
His mountain man days.
Because one of the things that I thought it was really interesting was the fact that all three sons of Philo Gaines had to deal with their father's reputation.
Right.
That he was this well-known, not only a mountain man, but a soldier and
right.
politician, and mm-hmm. and that how hard it was to live up to your dad.
Right.
Was that something that you experienced, or was that something that just you've seen other people experience?
That was probably more a product of my imagination mm-hmm. than my actual experience. My own dad, bless his heart, he passed away 20-something years ago now. He was a hard man to live with.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't a believer for a large part of my experience with him. In later years, he did come to know the Lord. So,
okay, good.
But yeah, he was kind of a difficult guy to live with. So he wasn't a real good example. Positive example. It's a pretty good negative example.
Gotcha. Yeah, one thing, your Christian faith definitely comes out in the book. Not overtly. It's not like, you know, a quote-unquote Christian novel.
Right.
But the faith of the characters is kind of there.
Right.
The ones who are faithful.
Yes.
You know, Matthew had once taught theology at Princeton.
Right.
I mean, that's quite a theological background to give a character.
Yeah. Yeah. My book is not considered Christian literature.
Right.
And there are, if you put ratings on books like you do on movies, my book would probably be PG-13. There are a couple of words in there which are a little colorful, but I try to keep that to a minimum. And it's like I had to have this conversation with my mom. My mom is a dear old believer, and she is just so sweet, and she's really an inspiration to me for anything spiritual. But I had to explain to her that not everybody in the book is a Christian. They're not all redeemed. It is a Western, so there's a kind of a rough element to it. And even the people who are redeemed in the book are totally sanctified.
Right.
So everybody has their issues that they deal with, just like real life.
Just like real life, yeah. Like I said, I thought that all the characters seemed to be very well developed and well thought out, from the good guys to the bad guys to the... Why a Western? Has it always been Western fiction for you? I haven't read a lot of your short stories. Are they all Westerns as well?
For the most part, 95% of them are Westerns. Gotcha. I have written a couple other stories in other genres, but I'm drawn to Westerns because I'm drawn to the Western lifestyle.
Gotcha.
I was born in Chicago. I grew up in Wisconsin, and we moved. I always wanted to move out west, and finally had the opportunity in 2002, when I took a job with the USDA. So, yeah, I've always tried to immerse myself in the Western lifestyle.
Okay, so that's just an area that is the history of it. And
And, you know, I grew up in the tail end of the golden age of TV with Gunsmoke and
Bonanza,
all those, Big Valley, all of those shows, and loved them. As a kid, I read every Louis L'Amour and Zane Grey book that I can get my hands on. And so those guys, those TV shows and those writers have probably inspired me the most.
Yeah, your book felt like a Louis L'Amour book. It definitely had that feeling to it.
Good.
I like the fact that the good guys were good and the bad guys were bad. Because in so much modern fiction now, the bad guys are as bad as the good guys are as bad as the bad guys sometimes.
Right.
Because everything has to be quote unquote realistic.
Yeah.
And I read fiction for escapism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to get into a story, cheer on the good guys, cheer when the bad guys get their comeuppance.
Right.
Which I don't think I'm. Would I be giving anything away if I said the bad guy gets his comeuppance in this?
No, not giving anything away.
Yeah.
It's a classic Western.
It is.
And,
yeah. It actually has some twists in it I didn't see coming, which I imagine a writer likes to hear.
Yep.
You weren't predictable.
Right. One of the first stories I ever had published was in an anthology called Rough Country.
Mm-hmm.
And this was it was published in 2014, I believe. The story was called The Conversion of Boaz Carter. And there is a real twist to the end of that story. And the editor who was working on the project at the time told me that my writing reminded him of O. Henry because of the twist that he always had in his stories. And O. Henry wrote a lot of Westerns. I wasn't aware of that.
I wasn't aware of that either.
Yeah.
My days of reading short stories, and when I did read short stories, I used to, I'm a big science fiction fan.
Right.
And so I used to get analog science fiction magazines. So I would be reading the short stories and the anthology, or the short stories and novellas, and
right.
every once in a while a serialized novel.
Mm-hmm.
You have to seek out short stories. Short stories used to be published in mainline magazines.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't do that anymore. You have to seek out an anthology or short fiction anymore.
Right. Yeah. Short stories, there aren't a lot of publishers that want to touch short stories anymore. There are a few. And I think when they do them very well and they have success. But most publishers want novels, and not just novels. They want a series. They want 3 or 4 books in the series, so.
Gotcha. Guess that helps with marketing.
That helps with marketing,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, when I was in high school, I took a class, an elective class that one of our English teachers taught called Lit of the American West.
Mm-hmm.
And not only were we reading the short stories, we were watching the movies that had been made from the stories. And it was at that time that it occurred to me that films are short stories.
Yeah.
There's not enough time in a film to do a novel.
Right.
You have to do the 12-hour Lord of the Rings movie.
Yeah.
You know, to do a novel.
Yeah.
Most of your good movies were made from short stories. Right,
based on short stories. Yeah. If they do a novel, like Lonesome Dove, they'd have to do it as a miniseries.
Right. With that one. And you see that on, especially with the streaming services now, where they're starting to do novels, novel length things. Yeah. And but that's true, that a short story is better for a film. Mm-hmm. That a film is about enough time to develop a short story.
Yep.
90 minutes to 2 hours, you can do a short story. But there's no way you can do a novel in 90 minutes. So have you got a Netflix deal going for your novel?
That's always the dream.
That is the dream, yeah. It'd be a good one. It would be a good one. Somebody needs to resurrect the Western. Mm-hmm. It's always funny watching Western movies and stuff that every once in a while, a big Western film comes out and they're like, oh, they're resurrecting the Western and everything. And the film does great.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't see another one for 5-6 years.
Yeah, they seem to cycle. I don't know really why that is.
Whereas you go back to when we were kids, there was a new Western coming out every month, it seemed like. Yeah.
We grew up at the right time.
I guess we did. Well, thanks for sitting down with us. I appreciate talking to you. And like I said, I enjoyed the novel. And and just take advantage of this. I guess that should be, you and I have been friends for half a dozen years or more, and you're an elder here at the church, so we see each other quite regularly outside of the Western genre.
Right.
So I appreciate you sitting down with me to talk about the novel.
My pleasure, Gene.
All right, folks. Well, as you go through the day, remember to do the things you ought to do. Don't do the things you ought not to do. And whatever you do, do it under the glory of the Lord. And we'll see you again here next time for another episode of Squirrel Chatter. Take care. God bless.
Squirrel Chatter is recorded in front of a live studio hamster.